Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton is fine. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. On today's podcast, we will be diving into some of those Colin Sexton trade rumors, looking at the options for the Cavs at number 3 and some of the options in free agency to see how they might fit with whoever the Cavs are picking. But there is only one logical place for this podcast to start. Carter, do you know what that place is?
No, I thought it might start with introducing me, but that's fine.
Hey, I molded it in. I mixed it in. But the logical place to start is by congratulating James Jones on making 8 of the last 10 NBA finals. Cavaliers legend. Is he going to get his 4th ring, Carter?
Well, I'm rooting for him. I don't know about you, but I'm definitely rooting for the Suns to win. I think James Jones took a lot of lumps early on in his GM career. I think for as evolved as NBA Twitter likes to pretend it is, some of their sneaky biases just trickle in.
They definitely
do. And when James Jones made a few moves that a few people didn't like, it was immediately like, what an idiot, this guy. And I very specifically remember a Valley of the Suns blog post. I think it was that blog that that said he should be fired if he did LeBron James a favor by cutting Tyson Chandler. like a 47-year-old Tyson Chandler. So I obviously root for the guy. I think he was a big part of why the Cavs were successful behind the scenes during LeBron's second run. And I think he's built a hell of a team here. Even picking dudes I didn't really agree with picking, like Cameron Johnson, that pick was destroyed. And yeah, he fits great. And they just have just pulled all the right levers. And it's a team that is like the ultimate add Chris Paul to them team, to like round out all their edges, and they're really, really fun to watch. And damn it, this is getting off topic here, but if there's ever been a time to talk about the Suns, it's right now.
Yeah.
So much of defense is about like picking your poison. You know, like we talk about the Bucks defense and how they're so good because they'll allow a lot of threes, but they just play really conservative and protect the rim. And you know, we have all these talks. Everything about defense is about like schematics, mm-hmm. conversationally, and very little of it, in my opinion, is about execution. Yeah. And the Suns are interesting because they play challenging defensive styles that they execute because everyone's smart and athletic and good at what they do. And like, so much about like modern defense is the way it's framed is like you're going to inevitably get your ass kicked somewhere. Right. And the Suns, I feel like, just don't do that. Like, they're just like, no, we're going to play a hard style of pick-and-roll coverage, but we're actually going to rotate, and everyone's going to get there on time. It's not about just like, well, I guess we'll play drops so they don't kill us, or I guess we'll switch so they don't kill us. It's, no, I think we're just going to play really smart and together so they don't kill us, and we'll actually stymie you more often than not. I think that's been a really cool thing to watch for that team. Am I making any sense here?
You are making sense. And you know what? You are ahead of the curve once again, which I commend you for, because this podcast is going to need to potentially pivot to a defense first podcast when we have Isaac Okoro, Evan Mobley, and Jared Allen together.
Defense is for shutting... cool guys now.
Defense is where it's at, folks, as this podcast has long said. That's a hell of a reality and something that's looking more and more possible. It's pretty funny. So when we did our Lotto reaction podcast, which I think was the last time we podcasted together, we were assuming Jalen Green. We were assuming Jalen Green because we thought, yeah, Evan Mobley's the clear second best prospect in this draft. Houston's clearly going to go that way. I actually kind of like his fit with Christian Wood. But everything seems to be trending a different direction where Evan Mobley falls to the Cavs. And while that makes some people uncomfortable, some people that are afraid of taking a 7-footer that high in the draft, maybe they liked what Jalen Suggs did in the tournament and they want that kind of leader for the Cavs despite the fit concerns. It's a really, really exciting possibility because this has been a guy that for months and months and months I've felt is closer to Cade than anyone else in this class. He's closer to that top tier. and a really exciting possibility. So let's start there, because I haven't really got your thoughts. We haven't even really talked a whole lot off air about the possibility of Evan Mobley and where you kind of stand on this.
Yeah, I done ghosted the discourse lately. It's been a crazy couple weeks for your boy, so I haven't been weighing in it maybe as much as I should. But regarding Mobley, you know, I thought you and Jackson Frank did a great job talking about both the fit of him and Suggs. And defensively, it just seems to make so much sense, you know? Like, the way he moves, the way he operates as a weak side guy, the way that with next to Jared Allen, you can really play an aggressive upfront pick and roll coverage. You can trap, or you can let your guards get wiped out a little bit, because you know that whoever is the big that's not involved in the action is the one that's going to be along the back line waiting to come help. And that is so valuable. So many times you'll see these teams, and not to condemn the Jazz's team building, because I think their team is really, really good, and they honestly just got hurt. But like, part of the reason you can pick on Rudy in those lineups isn't just because of Rudy. I think it's actually a bit of a misnomer. Part of the reason you can pick on Rudy is because their power forward is Bojan Bogdanovic.
Royce O'Neal.
Yeah, so if you involve Rudy in the pick and roll and make him come up to the level of the ball, there's no one left. And the reason that the Lakers were able to play so well, even with a defensive sieve in JaVale McGee, or even in their smaller lineups, is there's always someone that can come back, come lock down a shot at the rim.
Yeah.
With AD at the four or AD at the five and LeBron at the four, because he's enormous and a genius. And like, that's kind of what the Cavs, I think, get to unlock defensively here, is even if you are a little weak at the point of attack, you can play the point of attack so much more aggressively. Like, you're not locked into drop coverage. You can come up to the level of the screen, buy yourself that extra second of time while they have to dribble around your big, and then wipe out the shot at the rim. Play 2-on-1. That's one of Mobley's real strengths as a defender, is when he gets caught in two on ones as the one defender. So I love the fit defensively. Offense, one thing I'm a little worried about is the level of engagement and body language. He can kind of like, it's almost like when he's not all the way, either the first helper or the main on the ball guy, I watch his body like kind of loosen up. Like, he just kind of starts standing upright instead of kind of being that engaged freak athlete that he is. That's a minor concern. I think offense is the bigger concern. Just that
it also speaks to kind of him being the four defensively, like especially early in his career, having that line of a defense with Jared Allen with the Frobley big man pairing.
Unbelievable nickname opportunity.
Yeah, I mean that's got to be it, right?
It's got to be Frobley. Of course it is. But offensively, you know, I'm a little nervous. He's got good touch, that matters. The free throw percentage isn't alarming, but it's not awesome. And the jumper, at least as it currently is constituted, is slow and hitchy. So I'm a little worried about that. I think that playing it alongside some ball-dominant guards probably isn't the worst thing in the world for him.
Agreed.
Because he's not a creator as it currently stands, but he is a good connector. And I think that does matter if you're going to play the four.
I think it really matters, and I actually do feel like the Cavs are positioned well as currently constructed to work him into the rotation, to work him into the lineup, similar to how the Hornets had a lot of nice support pieces around LaMelo Ball. Yeah, there's going to
be
rookie
mistakes. Fourth best big on the roster, probably, to start.
Ooh, I wouldn't go that far.
I think Jarrett should be better than him. I think Kevin should still be better than him. Kevin Love is on Team USA. Come on, man. Come on. This is not controversial.
It's not controversial, but I don't know if I agree with it.
Well, like, then you are much lower on Kevin than I am. But
that's part of it. Yeah.
Larry Nance, I think, should be better than him.
I'll agree there.
I just think, again, like one of my favorite sets, I use it all the time, is Pelicans were better with Jason Smith on the floor defensively than with Anthony Davis his rookie year. It is hard to be an NBA player. So like, you know, to that end, like, it is the perfect spot to insulate him and give him only the minutes he earns, and let him kind of learn how to be a professional next to a pretty freaking good group of guys.
Yeah, really good. And part of why I don't have as many concerns for him is, well, one, I'm really high on Darius Garland. Like, I really do feel confident that next year is going to be a season where Garland is bending defenses, where he's actually going out there and making those type of plays. Colin Sexton, I'm assuming he's back. He's a guy that can do that as well. And Mobley being that connecting piece, operating out of the high post, the big-to-big passing, playing the pick and roll with two guards that are pretty dynamic in the pick and roll. Like, that's all really exciting to me, and I think it's going to make his life a lot easier, or at least easier relative to, let's say, he gets drafted by a team like Houston, who, yeah, they have maybe John Wall. He might not be there at the start of the season.
John Wall just is not a player option this year. He's almost done with that deal, right?
I believe so. If not, it's close. They may be looking to move off of it as well. But basically, a team without established playmakers. And I think that that's something that the Cavs can provide for him, and part of why I feel really good about it. Now, the question that does come up with the possibility of bringing in Mobley is, do you have concerns about paying Jared Allen if you're bringing in Mobley?
Nope. Nope. Next question. No, I don't. I'm not worried about that at all. I think that, you know, again, I keep talking about Clint Capella, and we're hoping Jared gets to as good as Clint Capella was this season. Mm-hmm. But Jared's definitely as good as Clint Capella was in his last season in Houston.
Yeah.
And they were able to recoup a first round pick for him. I think the price point would have to be pretty outrageous for them to not be able to at least get neutral value out of that. And I think that, as we've talked about, Evan Mobley's fit, I really do think he's a four right now. And maybe he ends up a five, but if the playmaking and the handle and the attack keep developing the way we think it should, then we're talking about something where it makes a lot of sense to put him next to a really smart rim-protecting five that can also act as a lob threat, play a little high-low game. Like, the Warriors, the KD Warriors are dead. You can play big lineups in the NBA. We're seeing it happen all the time and succeed. Talent is what matters. And sure, fit matters. One of them's going to have to get okay at shooting jumpers, or it's going to cap the ceiling of the team. But again, like, it's just so funny to me, man, how far in advance fans want to extrapolate out concepts. Right. It's like, buddy, we are not good enough to be talking about dumping a 23-year-old center who is this good on the off chance Mobley makes him redundant eventually.
Right.
Like, or
that
the
year one fit is awkward on offense but not on defense.
Yeah,
right?
like you know what else is awkward? Losing a bunch of games. They've been doing that. It doesn't matter. Like, yeah, like, it's just not time to worry about this yet. And frankly, can I say this as well?
Yeah.
Because I actually was just on the It's Cavaliers pod last night talking about this very debate. But actually regarding Jalen Green and Colin Sexton. And I think it is, no one wants to acknowledge the chance that, like, what if Mobley or Green aren't as good as we think they are?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to really regret not paying Jared Allen if you draft Mobley and he's like a 6 out of 10 player, which happens all the time with top 5 picks, even ones we all agree are really good. It's not like this is not an exact science. There is art to this. I believe that either player will be very, very good, but that's why you don't make these decisions right now, especially with a guy like Jared Allen, who's going to have value around the league because his archetype is still very, very valuable, and he is young, has a developing skill set. So, like, yeah, sure, there's probably a number that's too high for him, but, like, on the kind of deals we're expecting him to get, no, I am not worrying about it one iota regarding an extension or a new deal for Allen.
Right. I think the concern would be, hey, if this 22-year-old regresses or has injuries while also being a clunky fit with Mobley, yeah, that might be difficult. But even then, like, I still don't think you'd have to, like, attach an asset to move him. Like, this is somebody that's going to have value.
And can I jump in real quick? What's nice with Mobley, potentially, is that he really fits with any of the bigs, Larry or Kevin. So if, let's say, the fit is clunky, but you're liking what you're getting from both of them, just split them up a little bit. It's not that hard.
Just stagger them the same way that you stagger Sexton, right? Like, it's really not that difficult. And in the modern NBA, Clint Capella, even this year, played 30 minutes a night. That opens up 18 minutes that you could play Mobley staggered with him. And maybe you're playing Kevin Love as a small ball center where he's defending the bulkier players defensively, and Mobley's guarding the more kind of the speedier guys, and yeah. Kevin Love plays the four, and you're kind of inverting that on both ends of the floor. Like, there's a lot of options that you can go with there. And shoot, like, you can... If Mobley's that good and it's just a little awkward because there isn't spacing there and Isaac Okoro's jump shot hasn't progressed the way that you hope, maybe you bring Okoro off the bench. Maybe you put in someone like Torian Prince.
Yeah, and let me say this. Okoro is like, everyone's so worried about the fit with Mobley and Allen at the four and the five. I'm a lot more worried about the fit of Okoro at the three with those two.
I agree.
Because Okoro's going to, you better learn how to shoot if they draft Evan Mobley. Because,
yeah.
Three non, like, as much as we have banged the drum on, you know, these, you know, five out lineups isn't the only way to win. Three in lineups probably are not a great way to win.
No, I completely agree. And the nice thing about that is, if that is the direction you go, where his three-point shot didn't come around at training camp, and you need to buy yourself a little more time and get spacing in that lineup, and you go with a Torian Prince or a free agent that you sign that can kind of space the floor, Isaac Okoro all of a sudden gets more reps at shooting guard coming off the bench, right? Like, or as a ball handler, where we saw that he was more comfortable. Like, there's a lot of different ways you can go about this, and a lot of decisions and rotation decisions in particular that we can't really figure out until we know what these guys look like in preseason in training camp. Like, what if Evan Mobley comes in being able to shoot well? What if Jared Allen has extended his range to that kind of corner three-pointer that he's got nice touch at? Like, all of these variables could really change things. If Darius Garland comes in looking like an all-star, if Colin Sexton has made another leap, which he seems to do every year, like, there's so many ways that this can go.
Yeah, someday I'm going to be pressed to have a take on what the Cavs should or shouldn't do. But, like, I, you know, I just continue to be the let's just wait a minute and see how it goes guy, you know, and it's maybe it's boring, maybe it's risk averse, but, like, I just don't see the value in jumping into some of these decisions when they have time. Really, Jared's new contract is really the only choice they have, because they don't get to choose between Jalen Green and Evan Mobley.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to make a call on Colin Sexton right now.
Yeah. Which is why we haven't had a Mobley versus Green podcast, because I think that would actually be a more interesting conversation.
Yeah, but that's, if we were a Houston Rockets podcast, we'd probably be ripping the hell out of each other over this. But in this setting, it's just like the Cavs are at this point where they've made pretty good choices, and they have to let things marinate a minute, and then you can make some calls.
I still feel like there's residue left over from the three-year period of the Warriors, like the 2016, 17, and 18 stretch, particularly when they had KD, where people say, hey, you can't pay a center. You can't have a center on the floor. Like, the league is bouncing back in the other direction. A lot of these teams have more traditional big men that are useful in the pick and roll. The pick and roll is still one of the most effective plays in the NBA, especially when things are spaced out. Having that guy in Jared Allen is really attractive to me. Like, I think people need to get over what the Warriors were, because that was a really unique circumstance. And teams flat out just don't have the talent to play five out like that and make you pay. Like, especially mobile bigs, like Jared Allen and Evan Mobley are incredibly mobile.
They'll be able to defend five out lineups, I think.
Right. Like, one of the greatest small ball lineups we've seen with the Warriors was made ineffective by Tristan Thompson, a switchy big who's probably not as mobile as Jared Allen. Or, like, Jared Allen
makes
that
version of TT was. That dude
was
a freak.
That version of TT had the foot speed, but Allen, at least whatever he lacks in foot speed, which isn't tons, he makes up for in his length, right?
Yeah,
and when you have... And when you have Evan Mobley out there, you have Isaac Okoro potentially, like, stopping penetration from the perimeter. Like, the bones are there for this to be a really good defensive team.
I think the other problem people have is they don't understand, like, Mobley's archetype is so strange. I think that it messes with people.
He's one-on-one. Like, there's not an easy comparable.
And to that end, like, when they see... I think most people, and maybe they're right, so let's call that out. Maybe they're right, but I think when people see athletic, tall, lengthy big who doesn't have a super refined jumper, they just immediately kind of start saying, well, he's going to have to be a roll man. That's going to be the way his bread's going to be buttered. And when you say, if that is your opinion, if that is Evan Mobley's best road to success on the offensive side of the ball, which is possible still, I don't think we should write off that that might be the case, then the fit with Jarrett probably won't work. But like what I think Mobley fans are seeing is this elite feel for the game on that end of the ball, the playmaking, the reads, the touch on the floaters, you know, that kind of stuff that you're seeing where you can extrapolate out a face-up game that has a lot of value, that, you know, maybe even a little bit of a dribble attack game, a guy who can attack the basket in a controlled way with 1-2 dribbles.
Like he's got that go-to move. It's actually funny. It's kind of, it reminds me of the Okoro step back because it's so much more fluid of everything else he does. He loves to go left and turn around for the like 16 footer over his right shoulder. Like he's got some pet moves. He's got touch. Like to me,
running you see what I'm saying though with the roll man thing. It's like if that's what he is, then you can't play two bigs that only roll.
No. But you probably can run a Evan Mobley, Darius Garland pick and roll with Jared Allen in the dunker spot and two spacers next to them.
Do you feel like the Ben Simmons relegation to the dunker spot has made people like start to talk about the dunker spot as though it's not an effective place to be?
I think there's a little bit of that.
Because actually, it's called the dunker spot because you stand there and you get free dunks.
Yeah. DeAndre Ayton has shown that that's pretty effective. Yes. Rudy Gobert has made a career out of that. And like Evan Mobley is more offensively gifted than Rudy Gobert right now. Like it's, I don't agree think there's any question of that. And like the fact that he's got such a massive catch radius, like I would like to see some bench minutes of Evan Mobley with Hardenstein, Sexton, and maybe some other guys out there. Like that could be a hell of a lot of fun because like you have to deal with the speed of Sexton with everything that Mobley brings to the table. Like there's so many fun options.
Man, if they draft him, like just the, like whether it's Hartenstein being brought back or just that core four group of, I can't say core four, the four bigs of Nance, Love, Mobley, and Allen. What's so cool about that quad is any pairing of them is cool. Like you can do some fun stuff. If you go Love Nance, then you're much spacier, you're much faster, you're switchier. If you go Mobley Allen, you're huge. You can block out any pick and roll at the back end, and kind of play with these two, you know, absolute genetic freaks at the four and the five. If you go Nance Mobley, then you're just this absolute terror on defense, just switching, deflecting, just being, you know, really, really, like, that is probably the highest defensive IQ grouping they can have. It's really, really fun what they can do with that position, those two position groups, if that ends up being the four people that comprise the most minutes.
And the funny thing about that is your third strengths theoretically are Hardenstein
and Dean Wade.
Yeah, really useful players that once again like are fun, that makes sense there. And I think integrating Nance is a lot easier because we even saw them play around with Nance 3 and Dean Wade out there with him as kind of the two forwards. And I think that that's something that you can do a fair bit of. I will say this, my hot take, and once again, we should probably clarify because we do get a lot of new listeners, especially this time of year. We don't get anything from the Cavs. We do not get sources. We don't get anything. They let us be fans because if they gave us inside information, then we wouldn't be operating in that space as fans. My guess is, though, if they draft Mobley, I think they'd get aggressive at looking at ways to at least move one of Evan.
I would say so. I think that just is what makes sense in terms of the minutes distribution because you only got 24 minutes a game for each at that point.
Yeah.
And it gets challenging. But, you know, with everyone bought in, it's a good problem to have. Like, let's say they can't find great value for either their existing fours if they draft Mobley. Oh, damn. We just get to have really good players at every position, at every big man slot, pretty much whenever we need. And plus, you know, those guys are often banged up, so you're probably going to be rotating in the Wades and the Hartensteins of the world. But yes, I do think you're right that they probably would look to move on. You know what is kind of nice about the Mobley thing is it takes the Colin Sexton, and I know we're going to talk about this, it takes the Colin Sexton thing and takes it from a well, you probably got to look to move him because Jalen Green's coming for that spot, though I still disagree with that. But like the fit with their existing drafted players and their existing core players of Garland, Sexton, Okoro, and Jarrett, there's no real sacrifice that need to be made with the young core if you draft Mobley, which is kind of nice.
I'm with you. Like, and this might be the good point to pivot to Sexton talk, because once again, we do not have any inside information. We are in the dark and guessing. But like the thing about drafting Mobley is it really does make it easy to kind of run that core five, like to at least get a season together. In theory, like if Evan Mobley, the ball handling translates, the passing translates, and he's at least showing signs of a jump shot, like if that's working out, or if Jared Allen has a kind of the Brook Lopez arc of eventually shooting threes because he's got the touch now, like if that's the way that this goes, like that's a big man pairing that really works well with Saxland.
Yeah.
And that's super, super fun, because ultimately I'm invested in that. Like there's a reason this podcast doesn't go too deep into hypotheticals, because we like talking about what's tangibly there. And it's really funny as you like talk about the big man rotation. That's like power forward and center is kind of spoken for at that point. Like you don't need to pursue free agents there. You got a lot of your answers. The guards, Sexton, Garland, Okoro, like they're eating a lot of minutes. There's not a lot of spaces where you can really like plug in free agents or big additions. Like so much of this is relying on the young core to move forward. And I just like, to me, that's really exciting. Like that's something that I can get heavily invested in. And you, I think at that point, you're kind of hoping that you do what the Knicks did, or Miami or Memphis, where they made the playoffs this year, having a good defense and mediocre or worse offense. Like a lot of those teams were like 18,
and,
19,
and with
20
blossoming offense. Stars, guys like Ja that elevated them. Right. But let's have the Sexton discussion, because this has caught on in a way that's really surprised me. I thought that this would be more quiet explorations, and Jason Lloyd is on The Fan saying that he'd be surprised if Colin Sexton's on the team next season. So let's talk about whether you think this team should be looking to move Sexton, and like kind of like what it means that they're looking to move Sexton. Cause I think if that is the case, if reports are to be assumed, because to me, I'm surprised because of the fact that Evan Mobley is looking like he's going to be the pick. Mm-hmm. So it's like your hand is not forced one iota in this space. So it either tells me that there's a healthy market for a guy like Sexton.
Mm-hmm. Which I believe Bobby Marks said on Chris Fedor's podcast,
he did.
That he has a lot of trade value.
Or that the team's ready to move on. They don't think that he's the right fit next to the other young members of the core. I tend to think the former, because here's the thing. You're not just dumping Sexton to dump him and like buy, like, you know, I know that I've, you know, you've seen some of these terrible, you know, aggregator sites come up with their own trade proposals, and you'll see stuff like Sexton for Obi Toppin and Kevin Knox and an unprotected first. And it's like, that kind of deal does nothing for the Cavaliers.
Nothing.
They have an army of 20-year-olds, and Knox probably isn't an NBA player, and Toppin is flawed at best at a position where they're likely adding the third overall pick.
Yeah.
So, like, those kind of things don't make sense. I think the only reason you trade Sexton is if you're getting a young player who is cost-controlled in a way that Colin is not going to be soon, that is talented, or you use him to go big game hunting and go chase, you know, we've said it a billion times, but like a guy like Brandon Ingram, who's fit in his current situation is suspect and would be a really, really good fit on a team like the Cavs, a big playmaking wing. I don't see any other reason to trade him. What are your thoughts?
I agree with you. I mean, we addressed this in our questions that the Cavs have to ask themselves, that, hey, when you're getting to this contract stage, you have to look at all options. And if there is a gap between what both parties want, it makes sense to at least evaluate what options. Like, I'm sure in trade talks, they're hearing what other teams are willing to pay them, if they're willing to offer an extension, things like that. Like, to me, this strikes me as due diligence. And the reason why, if I had to guess, I would assume that Sexton's back next year is names like Brandon Ingram, Jaylen Brown, Ben Simmons, they're not on the trade market. Like, they're not really being, their names aren't out there in that way. I would assume with the Pelicans firing Stan Van Gundy, that's like a lot of the reporting was, hey, this is a move to keep Brandon Ingram happy. Jaylen Brown, Chris Mannix reported that they'd only give him up for Dame Lillard, basically. Ben Simmons, Daryl Morey, the reporting there is, hey, they'd only trade him for a proven all-star. Without a name like that back, I just don't understand what scenario would be worthwhile to move him, because this is a team that wants to take a positive step forward. They want to continue building a winning culture, which is something that he really epitomizes. Ultimately, like, I think this is something that they should have looked at, and that they should look at if there is a gap in kind of what both sides are thinking when it comes to an extension, whether it's Evan Mobley, Jalen Green, Jalen Suggs. Like, I think that this is the right way to do it. But they're not, this isn't a Kyrie situation. This isn't a spot where the Cavs are forced to make a move, even if they drafted Jalen Green. Like, we saw that feasibly work with Kevin Porter Jr.
How about with Charlotte? Like, LaMelo came off the bench. They had a glut of guards who are either paid well or had produced well, and they just let the best player win.
Right, and we saw OKC. They started Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Dennis Schroeder, and Chris Paul. Yeah, Chris Paul. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if, for whatever reason, like, Jalen Green's just ready to contribute now and play starter minutes day one. If you run out sex on Jalen Green with Larry Nance and Jared Allen, like, that could be something that works. Like, I don't think their hand is forced in any one direction. And for that reason, like, yeah, do your due diligence. Emotionally, yeah, I'd like to see Sexton back. I'd like to see Sexton get another shot, especially with Evan Mobley, because we're seeing it even in this year's playoffs. There is less and less, especially when it gets to the postseason, there's less and less of every team has to be constructed the exact same way and play the exact same way, and whichever team hits the most threes wins. That's
well,
not how
the
these playoffs
go. The last part still might be true.
Yes, whoever scores the most typically wins in the NBA. But we're seeing teams that are built differently, and, like, to me, there's something unique about that. The sex line with Frobley, like, that's a lot of fun. Like, I'm very much here
I don't
for
like
it.
That you're acting like you, that's natural for you to say already. The only reason, unless you can go big game hunting, which seems unlikely right now given the market, now you can never rule it out, but given the market as we currently understand it, that's unlikely. The only thing that really makes sense is either getting a young wing who is just earlier into his rookie contract timetable.
Yeah.
I think there's something to the Hero discussions on that front. Like, not a big fan of him. But, like, that's the reason is you buy yourself another year of eval.
I'll say this about Tyler Hero. It is not the best sign in the world that Jimmy Butler is no longer tight with him and Miami seems so motivated to move him. That is a very, very bad sign, especially for a team that's looking to build a positive culture, a culture that Colin Sexton contributes to in a positive way. If Tyler Hero's being an issue in Miami, how's he going to be in Cleveland?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's something I
completely agree.
And that ignores the fact that he's just not as good as Colin Sexton.
Yeah, and Colin Sexton is better than Tyler Hero today. That he would have to give up something to get extra to get him. But the point is, a player like that, in that archetype, and there aren't many, because, by the way, if you got a young wing who's good, you ain't
trading available.
So those are the kinds of players that, outside of the already, like, probably like the tier three stars like Brandon Ingram,
as you said, he makes sense if you're big game hunting, which likely means attaching things with him, like attaching future picks,
I'm interested
assets.
In doing I'm not down on that, but in the interim, I'm not. The Cavs should not, in my opinion, look at Colin Sexton as someone they need to move off of. Because they don't need to. And honestly, I would rather, if it's between keep him on the team and let the contract ride out and just let someone else sign him versus trading him for Obi Toppin and the 18th overall pick. I honestly would rather the former, because that at least gives me more time to figure things out and maybe extract some legit value elsewhere.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the easiest way to sum this up, and I'm basically stealing this from your Twitter account, is I'm okay with it if it makes the team better. And I just don't think there's a lot of those options available.
Nope. Like,
it's, I think
Colin fulfills a very valuable role on this team that is starved for shot creation, which is creating shots.
Yeah. Yeah. He's pretty damn good at it.
And really, as much as people, and people are so funny in their selective viewing of this team, where they'll see the cat, if Colin's out or on the bench and they have three possessions in a row where they run some decent offense, they'll go, man, sure seems like the offense is flowing better. I remember
it's just freeing up. It's just freeing
and
up.
I remember there was a game where people were saying that in the first quarter, and in the second quarter they scored 7 points or something like that. And it's like, yeah, I guess it's kind of nice to have Colin Sexton now, huh, guys? So yeah. You know, again, like until I'm presented with an obviously better option or even an equivalent option, damn it, worth considering. Because by the way, Tyler Hero doesn't fix your defensive problems in your backcourt, gang.
No, his little T-Rex arms, 6'4" wingspan. Each.
So like, you know, like until there's an option that objectively helps, the Cavs can keep kicking this can down the road.
One name that we haven't mentioned here that I'm going to bring up because I've got a gripe, CJ McCollum. If you are someone that is advocating for CJ McCollum,
just go ahead and put on your Browns jersey and wait for the season to start.
That would be a big part of it. You are also admitting that whatever you got going on with Colin Sexton is personal, because CJ comes with all those same problems. He comes with a bad contract that Borland is probably trying to move off of. That's probably in excess of whatever you'd have to pay Sexton to keep him. Does not make an effort on defense and doesn't have the upside and possibility of eventually doing that. Like, Colin Sexton could pass CJ McCollum in the very near future. I don't think that would be a big surprise. He has the upside to become a good defender. We've seen him play good defense at times. Like, at that point, you're just admitting it's something personal, because that is not addressing any of the needs. You're still a small backcourt. And like, to me, that's one of the most outlandish ideas that's been tossed out there. I just don't understand it. Again, if it's part of a larger deal and there's other moving parts, we'd evaluate that. We'll look at everything in a vacuum. But ultimately, like, I just don't think that there's going to be, even though Bobby Marx says that there's a healthy market, I don't think that market is a market that's going to return Cleveland a player that is better than Sexton. So yeah, do your due diligence, whether it's Evan Mobley or Jalen Green or Jalen Suggs or someone off the board. Like, I don't care. You should still be doing that. I think that's what smart teams do, rather than falling in love with the guys that have got them there, unless it's like, hey, it's a no doubt situation. It's Luka Doncic or whatever example you want to throw in there. Yeah, it makes sense to do that. But I don't think that this is a team, like, they didn't make any panic moves at the trade deadline. I don't think they're going to make a panic move in this situation. I don't think this isn't the situation where it's been reported that Sexton's asking out, or it hasn't been reported that the Cavs are desperate to trade him or anything.
And by the way, that is one concern I do have with these rumors, is that we have seen players take this stuff to heart and let it affect their play. Not a concern I have for Colin Sexton. Because maniacs be maniacs, and I don't think that the way he feels about this team, let's say there are hurt feelings, I don't think that the way he feels about this team will affect the way he plays basketball. I just think he is too, he's single-minded for better or worse, guys. And like, I do think that he is like, I just don't think, I think that part of his brain is too hyper-focused on playing hard. In practicing,
have you seen his latest IG video?
Oh yeah, like, I think it's just all irritating motivation to him. Like, everything is sandpaper to that guy.
He literally did the KD thing of where he's taking shots while talking about like every criticism he's heard, whether it's real or not. And I like, that's the type of stuff that I'm just such a sucker for. Like, I'm all in for it. And like, when we look at the fit of Evan Mobley, like, it's there's a lot of really exciting stuff you can do. And what Colin Sexton did at the end of the year, like, he flashed pretty good playmaking. Basketball Index, the fact that he ranks so highly in their playmaking, and the, like, their analysis is, hey, this guy is a better playmaker than his raw numbers show. That's something really intriguing. Like, there are people that have been hired to NBA sites from that site, like, or NBA teams from that site. Like, they know what they're talking about. I don't always agree with how they present their facts, but, like, the data is good, and there's reason to be optimistic with him. So, I'm excited.
That's what's, like, so funny is, I think we are actually pretty, you know, on this, maybe we're Sexton fans in the abstract, or, like, in practice, but, like, in the abstract, when we talk about his place on the team, I feel like we're very much centrists. Mm-hmm. We're interested in ways to improve on him, in ways for him to improve himself, but we're not in a hurry to get out, to get out either. Like, we like the Colin Sexton experience.
Yeah, and I think history usually shows that if you make a move too early, it can come back to bite you. Like, if Colin Sexton ended up in Miami, he's making an All-Star team within 3 years in Miami.
The way the narrative will flip will make me sick.
It would be disgusting, and, like, it's really hard.
If he never gets 1% better, but is in Miami the rest of his career, the way that the media will talk about him, oh, I'm already mad about it.
Be disgusting. And, like, the fact that Evan Mobley is a guy that would come in with playmaking, Jalen Green come in with playmaking, like, I do think that there's going to be enough of that by committee, and I'm a believer in Darius Garland stepping up as a playmaker and a floor general, and potentially having, like, an all-star caliber season next year. That's my hot take. I'm all in on Darius Garland all-star 2022. Like, there's a lot of things to get really excited about. The fit makes sense. There's a lot of things you can do. And, like, I'm just really excited. Like, I didn't think the possibility of Mobley falling was real. It looks like it is. And now our worst case is Jalen Green. Houston
like crazy. Like, I don't understand why they're smoke screening. But, yes, Jalen Green being our worst case outcome, pretty good. That's also,
pretty damn good.
Also, I'd still call Troy Weaver for that 2022 first top five protected. Maybe even top three protected, Justin.
I'm going to go one more. Unprotected.
You're wild.
Look, man. Unprotected. Go get Cade.
I mean, Cade solves all their problems in very, very short order.
That's the thing. Cannoli.
That is a trade that you get killed on Twitter.com and in the trade grades. But if you are right about who Cade is, then you win.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you're right about being better next year, which Cade would go a long way towards doing that, it's less of a gamble.
I think we are just so over young, like, adding more young guys to this team that we're just like, whatever, trade them all. Like, we got enough.
That's part of it, man. That is absolutely part of it. Like, if for whatever reason they took Jalen Green number one, like, I'm calling up Houston and I'm offering a protected first, and I'm offering Houston's second round pick back next year, which will likely be like pick 31 or 32. That'll be awesome. Like, I'd be definitely aggressive for that, but Evan Mobley or Jalen Green, I'm 100% okay with just taking whichever is left. We're going to get into free agents and guys that fit. Do you want to go through that or save that for another podcast?
Listen, we're in off season. These are lean times. We can't feast on topics. Okay.
I like that. You know what? A little tease. Yeah,
we're
going to
talk
episode.
Some prospective free agents next time.
Yeah. How about that?
Tune in to hear me talk about TJ McConnell more.
Well, I'm glad that we had the Sexton talk. I wasn't expecting to have it because, like, when we discuss our big questions for the Cavs this offseason, like, I thought we kind of covered it and made our opinions clear.
Yeah, but the more real it sounds, I think the more it's worth continuing to deep dive in on it.
I completely agree. Like, it gained so much traction that, hey, let's refresh our stance for those that didn't hear it the first time around, and let's kind of break it down. So I'm glad that we did it. I think ultimately, like you said, we are emotionally invested in Sexton. I'm emotionally invested in all these players. But ultimately, I'll get over any deal if it makes the team better. Like, I've gotten over a lot of stuff in my time as a Cavs fan, and I still have this cheery disposition.
Yeah, you're very cheerful, Justin.
Hopefully our listeners are cheerful, too. The draft is just over 3 weeks away, man. And it is returned to a Thursday, which which is important because last year... The draft is Thursday.
Gosh, there's Cavs fans who don't know what that means, and I'm sad.
Just Google it. Google it. It's one of my cherished memories. It's one of the things that makes me feel like we are returning back to normal. So I'm excited about that. Hopefully this time off that I'm taking a little later this month is going to help the time skip by.
Less than a month away. That sounds insane to me.
It is insane to me, especially with how long we waited last time. But I'm going to be taking a vacation very soon because I'm turning 30. And that's what you do when you are fully vaxxed, baby.
I thought you were older than me. I thought you were already 31.
Oh, no. I just look like hell for my age.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah. Well,
bye, everyone. Goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah. And on that note.
Good banter. Is this good for everyone?
Was that good for you? Good for you? Anyone want to have a smoke after that? Hopefully listening to us isn't making you look older than you already are. If it's not, make sure that you leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cavs.